Does eating red meat lead to type 2 diabetes? That is my question today and the conclusions from a recent study out of Harvard. My guest is Dr. Harcum, and I want you to picture this. Your plate is a battlefield, and the war is being waged against the enemies of misaligned interests, captured institutions, and downright terrible nutrition guidelines. These are the forces keeping you sick, broke, and brainwashed. But fear not, because today I have a warrior in our midst. Her name is Dr. Harcum, and she's from the UK, and she recently posted on Twitter 14 things that she found wrong with this study. She's here to cut through the propaganda. Folks, this is why we question everything. Dr. Harcum has pointed out issues ranging from absurd calorie counts and a notion that women somehow eat more red meat than men. I mean, come on. And let's talk about hidden agendas. Dr. Harcum suggests that this study isn't merely flawed, it's designed to purposefully mislead. This study conveniently ignores grains and sugars. So what's the end game here? Is this even science, or is it some sort of covert operation to push an agenda? Dr. Harcum suggests it's the latter. Your health is too important to be a pawn in this war. Arm yourself with knowledge, question the status quo, and reclaim your self-sovereignty. My guest today is Dr. Zoe Harcum. Dr. Harcum, what should people understand about this study that is making waves? People that are in the keto community, people who practice a carnivorous diet, just people who like meat. How do we get past the headlines?
So generally in nutrition, any nutritional headline that you see in the media, you should ignore. As a general rule, that is going to serve you very well. The agendas that are going on, unfortunately, in academia are just getting more and more relentless. So there is a very strong agenda to drive us away from eating the foods that we've evolved to eat, the foods that make us healthy, the simplest foods, the foods for which there are no great profitable margins. There has been a drive since the late 1970s in the US and the early 80s elsewhere in the world to drive us away from heritage ancestral foods towards things that come out of factories, because they quite frankly make a lot more money. They also make a lot more money for pharma, because we get sick eating these things. And then we need other conditions treated, like obesity, type 2 diabetes, and worse. And they're driving us away from eating what we've been designed to eat. And it's just getting more and more common.
So that agenda, is it a global push? What is behind that? And how does it make its way into our institutions like Harvard?
Yeah, I do believe it is a global push. I've looked a lot, not only at the nutritional value of food and what we should be eating from a nutritional perspective, but I've also looked at things like conflicts of interest. So, for example, in the UK, the UK Healthy Eating Guide was actually designed by predominantly industry bodies who represent the fake food industry. And that panel was actually appointed by Public Health England. So Public Health knew exactly what they were doing in terms of inviting the Food and Drink Federation, the Institute of Grocery Distribution, Association for Convenience Stores, which is like your 7-Elevens, organizations that essentially want to sell us quick, fast food. And it's exactly the same in the US. If you look on my site and you put in the search box American dietitians, I've been writing about this since 2009 when I did a chapter in my obesity book on the conflicts of interest in the American dietetic community. You've got a brilliant researcher, Belinda Fetke, who's married to Dr. Yes. Gary Fetke, who speaks at conferences. Belinda has taken the research even further back to Sylvester Graham, John Harvey Kellogg, back to the late 1880s, 1890s into the 20th century, and shown how the emergence of these massive conglomerate cereal companies has very much driven the agenda. Eat grains, don't eat, have cereal for breakfast, don't have eggs, have pasta for dinner, don't have red meat or fish. It's just been a relentless agenda. And of course, now it's also caught up in this whole sort of climate rationale of you can't have animals in your diet because it's bad for the planet. It's absolutely 100% the opposite. Without having ruminants in our diet, there is no topsoil. There is no preservation of topsoil. We have no longer any ability to feed the planet naturally using the resources of the planet. And suddenly all food does have to be made in factories. and any sort of salads and so on are grown upside down in greenhouses that would litter the land. I mean, the sort of end goal of how you control the food supply from a factory, not farm perspective is really quite dystopian.
You make a great point there. When you mention the misaligned interest between policymakers, the fast food industry or the industrial food complex and researchers. So is one hand is like scratching the other, is the researchers are sort of helping support this misaligned interest to drive profits, or do the researchers actually believe what they're putting in these papers?
That's a good question. I've been a board member on an academic institution in the UK, so I know, and I've done a PhD, so I've seen sort of academia from a couple of different sides. Essentially, academics now are—is it too strong a word to use the word prostitutes? They are people who do things for money. So they need money. They need money to buy more researchers, to fund more research, to keep the institution going. And of course, the place that you're most likely to get money is from big food, big pharma, and big agri-chemical companies. So those are the people with the deep pockets. Those are the people that you need to please. If you start publishing research that says red meat is nutritionally superior to factory food, we shouldn't consume sucrose, and perhaps there might be lifestyle alternatives to drugs, you're not going to attract money for your institution. And the goal of the people at the top of the organization, the heads of the departments, the heads of the organization are to bring in, they're essentially fundraisers. They're to bring in money for their organization because money then buys them more PhD students. More PhD students is more research. More research is more research points, brings in more money. And that's the cycle that they want to get into. I don't see any honest academic research being done anymore because it's just being funded by organizations with deep pockets. Honest academic research would be, let's think of a proposition, let's test it in a randomized controlled trial. We can come back to this meat study and how poor evidence is from epidemiological studies. We can go to what they are and all the rest of it. But people now don't start with an honest research question of what would happen if I put some people on a ketogenic diet and I compared them to people on the standard American diet, and then I tested these particular things over this particular period of time. Studies like that are you know, rare if done at all.
So to talk about the study in particular, one thing stood out to me. I'm just a disenfranchised dietetics student. I studied dietetics at a university and eventually decided to pursue other avenues of providing value to people. And I don't feel like that was a mistake looking back. But this study in particular, it makes me question maybe just the nutritional training of the researchers involved. The study included sandwiches and lasagna in the definition of red meat. So how does this skew the data? And what does this say about the study's methodology?
Yeah, so I mean, just a quick bit of background that probably we should have covered up front. The hierarchy of evidence, what are we actually looking at? When we see something in the newspaper, how do we know is this good evidence or not? So we have a pyramid in nutrition, and at the bottom of the pyramid, you've got something called an individual case study, which would be, I give one person one drug, and then I can write up a report in terms of what happened. Then you move up to more people in a case study. So you might give a whole team of people a dietary intervention or a drug and see what happened. Then you start moving up the pyramid. And that's the sort of lowest point of the pyramid of what we would call a big study. You've got population studies. And they take a large population of people. So this particular study used the ones that Harvard use all the time. Harvard, basically, that I think they've got a computer running somewhere in the background that is just saying, search the nurse's health study, which is the women. That one was started in 1980, and search the men's health professional study, which was, I think, started in 1991. And just search them for patterns, and particularly search them for patterns that fit our agenda, which is meat is bad and whole grains and legumes are good. So that's the lowest level of evidence in terms of big studies. And that can only establish an association. So when you followed those people over a long period of time, you should be able to say, gosh, look at this. The people who smoked at the beginning of the study went on to develop lung cancer. And you should then test that in a randomized controlled trial. Now, sometimes the relationships are so strong, you don't have to test that in a trial. So smoking, for example, you would study that data and you would say the people who smoked were, let's say, 20 times more likely to go on and develop lung cancer. You don't need to test that in a trial. That is, if you then look at the rest of the Bradford Hill criteria, so you look for things like temporality, were the situations matched in terms of time scale, you would conclude that smoking causes lung cancer. So you don't have to go any further. But the kind of ratios that these guys are finding, the risk ratios, sometimes they're around 10%. They've got to be a minimum of 100%, a minimum of double, before you'd go look into the Bradford Hill criteria to say, do we think now then that we should investigate whether or not red meat causes diabetes, or whether we've just observed an association between the two together? But of course, the most obvious connection, we call it a confounder in that relationship, is what do people eat when they eat meat, particularly in the US? So the US is known as the land of burgers and hot dogs. And when you're having burgers and hot dogs, you know, a carnivore can walk into McDonald's and have a burger and nothing else, but they probably don't. They probably go to a steakhouse and just get a decent slab of meat because they know that the burger's got fillers and flour and all the rest of it. But what are you eating with the burger and the hot dog? You're eating a white bun, you're eating fries, and you're having a fizzy drink or a milkshake or some kind of ice cream or whatever. Those are the confounders. So if you observed an association between a burger and diabetes, almost certainly what you were really observing was the association between the bun and the fries and the fizzy drink and diabetes. So yes, you're right. In the original study, and I went back to find out, and food frequency questionnaires are another massive flaw in these population studies. It's just sort of, you know, your basic flaw number one. You're going to people saying, do you remember what you ate last year? And it is last year. I didn't make that up. It's not, what did you eat yesterday? They say, what did you eat last year? And they'll say, how often did you have 6 to 8 ounces of chicken or 6 to 8 ounces of chicken with the skin on? And you've got to remember, did I have it with the skin on or did I have it the skin off? Was it 6 to 8 ounces? What even is 6 to 8 ounces anyway? And I gave the example, if you have 5 ounces of chicken every day, do you say, well, actually, I never eat 6 to 8 ounces, because you don't eat 6 to 8 ounces? Or do you work out your 5 ounces a day in 6 to 8 ounce portions and say, okay, that means I probably have 6 to 8 ounces 3 times a week? Yeah, I mean, there's so many flaws in all of that. Then you add on top of the flaw that they include in what we define as red meat, and it's in the red meat section as well as the processed meat section. Did you have a meat sandwich? Did you have meat as part of a takeaway dish? Did you have meat as lasagna, for example? Did you have meat as part of a casserole, which in the UK comes with things called dumplings, which are flour-based? I mean, it's inaccuracy on top of inaccuracy on top of inaccuracy. It gets to the point that this is just not even worth the paper that it's written on. And yet it's made headlines all around the world.
You know, I've said before that at a high enough level, incompetence sort of appears like malice. What do you think we're dealing with here? Is this researchers chasing money, or a department chasing funding, or is this their worldview?
Yeah, I'm at the point. I mean, you're right. It can only ever be those two things. It's incompetence or it's unprofessionalism, malice, whatever you want to call it. The Harvard School of Public Health was called the Harvard School of Public Health. It's now called the Harvard T. Chan School of Public Health. So they got $350 million from somebody called T. Chan. I would put a lot of money on the fact that there's an agenda there, that Harvard has been given $350 million to continue to publish papers that say meat is bad, legumes are good, whole grains are good, carbs are good, fat is bad, those sort of kinds of messages. There are a couple of things in the paper that say to me, I think it's malicious. That's my personal view. So sure. I'll take an example. In table one, which is the characteristics table, that's where I always go to in a population paper because it just tells me so much. I don't actually read the paper, by the way. That will surprise a lot of people. I look at the numbers because the paper tells me what they want me to take away from the paper. That's their narrative. The numbers tell me what I need to know, and the supplemental data tell me what I need to know. So in table one, they would put the people from the nurses' health study one, nurses' health study two, the health professionals study, which is the men. And then they would tell us characteristics about them. What was their average age? How many of them smoked? All the rest of it. And they would have their average meat intake, red meat intake. They put in poultry intake. They put in fish intake. They put legume intake. They put fruits and vegetables intake. The intakes that they didn't put on are the ones that tell me this has to be malicious. This cannot be incompetence. You didn't just by chance forget to put on grains and sugars, because those are the two things that would tell us something about diabetes. That it has to be deliberate. And then at the footnote to table two, they say, oh, because I was just about to write, you know, I was working through my note. I got the paper opener and I've got my note opener and I'm working through it. And I was just about to write, crikey, they didn't even adjust for grains and sugars. So I really searched the paper thoroughly, and there it is in the footnote to table two. We did adjust for grains, refined and whole grains. They didn't say that they adjusted for sugars. It's like, okay, you're telling me that you adjusted for those things, but you didn't show me what the intake of those things was to start with. Because I would look at table one and I say, oh, for goodness sake. So the people who ate the most meat, let's say, ate 10 times the grain intake or the sugar intake as the people who didn't eat the most meat. And you're going to tell me that you're blaming the red meat intake. You know, you're going to tell me you're blaming two portions of red meat when, let's say, they were having 10 portions of grains a day, which is quite possible. To not give me that information tells me they didn't want me to see that information, because somebody who knew what they were looking for would make that inference. And that's the logical inference to make. Diabetes is a condition of glucose metabolism, and the key foods that are going to upset glucose metabolism are carbohydrates, and the key grains, therefore, are going to be flour and sugar. So tell us that information.
Final question, and I'm going to refer people back to your full tweet, because it goes down and breaks down, and people can kind of look in this study if they're a nerd for that kind of thing. How do we hold these institutions and researchers accountable? Like, who is responsible for this? Or are we just supposed to ignore it? Or is there something that people can do on their own?
I do often write to them. I have had rebuttals published in journals. I've had absolutely nail-on rebuttals rejected by journals, because they don't want the rebuttal, because the rebuttal goes next to the article. So sometimes I'll get a comment in the British Medical Journal. There's an article in, there's a rapid response a couple of times. I and colleagues can get a rebuttal put next to it, but they don't like that. They want the article to stand looking like it's a great article. So I can try to spend a lot of time doing a rebuttal. I can't imagine for 1 minute that the American Journal of Clinical Nutrition is going to publish it. By the time they do get around to publish it, the ones that I've had published tend to be a few months after the paper, and it's getting all the attention now. So the attention is going to have a massive spike, and then the attention it's going to get in 6 months' time is negligible. That would be when my rebuttal might get in. The other thing I often do is I write to researchers. I quite often find errors. So you'll notice if you read the full post that I put together, that I referred back to the first time that I saw this team, Walter Winnett, Frank Hugh, do exactly the same kind of thing. It was also in the American Journal of Clinical Nutrition. They also had a pop at red meat and diabetes. That was back in 2011. And there was an error in that paper. So I emailed the corresponding author and I said, this doesn't look right. And they actually came back and said, no, you're right. Thank you very much. We can amend it online. So quite often I spot a genuine error and they can correct it in the online version. And they are grateful for that, because they don't actually want an error in their journal article. But when it's not just an error, it's a sort of malice, it's misleading, it's leaving out information that they should have put in, they don't want you pointing that out. The journal are not going to publish it. I can probably write to Walter Willett. I notice he's the corresponding author. I've met him. I've spoken at a conference with him in Zurich. He doesn't like me. He doesn't like Nina Teicholz. He doesn't like people who are pointing out that red meat is nutritious and the grains that you're asking us to eat are less so. I can email him. I wouldn't put much money on him even deigning to reply, because I'm some little dirt on his shoe blogger from where he sat, and he is eminent super professor from Harvard, and how dare I challenge his magnificent research. That will be the attitude. So I probably will bash off an email and he probably won't reply. So what does the average person do? You just got to ignore this stuff. The dietary guidelines are not going to change. The conflicts are at the highest level. The profitability is at the highest level. Meat doesn't make much margin. Find your local farmer, find your local fishmonger, find your local egg supplier, grow your own vegetables and ignore what they're telling you in the media and from the dietary guidelines committees.
Dr. Harcum, thank you so much for taking your time out of your day to speak with me and to share this value with my audience who eat a low-carb diet, which typically is mainly meat. And my health has been improved, my parents' health, and the lives of many thousands of people all around the world have been improved by eating a diet that is focusing on proteins and fats. So I really appreciate it. Thank you again.
Thank you for inviting me. Thanks very much.